Hey, Owen, here we go. It is episode 126 of We Talk Comics. I'm your host, Keith, back for another Comic Talk episode. And I'm joined by Chris.
Yes, I am here. I'm excited about this, actually. Would you say this is our sort of clearing post episode? Over the years, lots of talented creators have been nice enough to give us samples of some books, and for whatever reason we haven't got to it, and today we're going to go through our files and just talk about some of the excellent work, and let's be honest, some not so excellent work that these creators have been kind enough to share with us. And I guarantee there are going to be a couple books that you need to go to the websites where these books are sold and pick them up. These are all independent guys. These are all guys killing themselves to make a good book. And we want to share their work with you. We were remiss in the past for not mentioning them. We're going to mention them tonight. Would that be a fair summary of what we're doing tonight?
I think let's call this small press spring cleaning. That's a good title for the episode.
Yeah,
it is. We do get sent a lot of review copies, particularly independent stuff that people are really, just trying to squeeze any kind of attention they can. Unfortunately, a lot of the comics press doesn't pay attention to small press. We didn't go to the extra step of researching which ones of these are on Comixology, for example. So we'll try to list the company as well as creators. Hit Twitter and hit Google to figure out how to track these down. It'll be an old school comic hunt. It'll be like it'll be the digital version of going through long boxes trying to find that missing issue from a small press book. I was describing to a friend the other day, the one thing I miss was of hard copy comics is digging through long boxes trying to find number two of screenplay from Adventure Comics, which I actually had to dig through boxes for more than 20 years to find. So this is the digital equivalent.
Why did you need screenplay from Adventure Comics?
I knew the artist when I was a teenager, and I
kind of figured it would have to be something like that.
Yeah, and I bought number one. And then I moved across country. So the comic store that would have been bringing it in was far behind me. And it probably shipped about 800 copies worldwide. No trade paperback of that one. Also not on Comixology.
You're lucky. You found it. My quest for the Holy Grail, I believe, was Sonic Disruptors number 7.
See, that
which, if you remember, before the days of the internet, it was hard to find out that they just stopped publishing Sonic Disruptors. never mind that it was a 12-issue limited series. They just stopped publishing it.
The old days when you had to rely on Overstreet to tell you that kind of thing. The great tome of every comic fan dragging their copy of Overstreet with 8-month-old prices to the comic store. Prices that were out of date literally before the book came out.
I used mine as a checklist. Everyone else had those little nicely written out want lists and stuff. I actually dragged Overstreet with me.
I love
making the checklist.
I love that that my assumption there is that you literally had a checklist of every comic ever published. That was your want list. and that explains a lot about your current collection, now that I think about it.
It wasn't quite like that, but almost.
I try to.
Does Silver Street even still publish? I don't even know. I'm feeling remiss.
I think they finally ended. I think they finally stopped the book. I don't know if they may still publish the monthly magazine. They also published a monthly listing. But I think the annual has stopped.
It's just like I used to wait for this time of year every year when the Leonard Maltin's guide come out.
That one
now
has,
I don't give a damn.
That one has stopped. Yeah.
It has. Oh, okay.
That Maltin guide has.
I just assumed there would be enough people.
I think
people
it
bought that one.
I think it stopped about two. Yeah, I think last year, the year before was the last year of it. I remember it being fairly recently, like as recently enough that I said, "Oh my God, they're still publishing that." So it was. Yeah, it was just the last couple of years that they finally stopped. I mean, again, it was like, you know, another reference that's out of date as soon as it comes out. And I Internet Movie Database was the first website I ever visited. I cannot believe Leonard Maltin lasted as long as it did. I was
well,
at
I would have actually assumed the value of his reviews would propel it longer than some of the others, but
I don't know. Like I like
of course.
There was a Siskel and Ebert one that I used to get instead.
Actually, I like the generic one with some no name, they were all the same book though, basically. Basically, you know, I only ever used it as a reference, what I would now use IMDb for. So,
when I was a kid, I actually did highlight all the movies I had seen, again, treating it like a checklist. I would highlight every movie as I saw it, which I guess I still do on IMDb. I go and rate every movie that I see on IMDb. I looked the other day.
You do? I started that for a while, but I used Amazon. Which I now regret doing. They now know how to get money out of me now that I've given all this information. They send me targeted emails that very rarely fail to hit some sort of, if I click this, it'll cost me $20, but I want it.
They are extremely good at the recommends, that's for sure. That
of course
is...
you probably get those too. Isn't IMDb owned by Amazon?
No, I don't believe so. I think it's still an independent thing. I think it's its own thing. It does have a recommendation system. I find it kind of so-so. I like when Amazon recommends stuff and I feel smug when it gets it wrong. Like, you're not gonna get me to watch Game of Thrones, stupid Amazon. People like you ordered this. Yeah, well, not everyone like me likes that.
No. See, but I have an opposite reaction when it does that, actually. It's, according to the things you've bought, you need to buy My Little Pony. And then I start to wonder what I clicked on. What little box did I click on that all of a sudden it thinks I would like this? It's like it's besmirching my good name.
There was a fantastic article years ago when TiVo first started being a thing that was called My TiVo Thinks I'm Gay. And it was about this guy who he watched, you know, Dead Like Me and What Not to Wear, I think, were like the only two shows, like there were two shows that he put on his TiVo. But TiVo started recording a whole bunch of programming that was, you know, targeted for a gay audience. So he tried offsetting it by recording a whole bunch of like World War II stuff on History Channel. And then he started getting all this like almost neo-Nazi stuff from late night TV, and it was so much worse. Yeah, when the recommendations feel like they're judging you. Oh man, how's anything else been?
But tell me, how was Billy Idol? And I apologize if you just told me
That's
I had a
okay.
little bit of a dropout there.
I thought it was a fantastic concert. He played for almost 2 hours. I actually flew to Vancouver specifically to see the show. I promised myself that the next time he toured, I would go wherever I had to go. And this is a bucket list concert for me. And then I tacked a couple extra days on and visited with friends while I was out there. I did some comic book shopping. There's some great stores in Vancouver.
Which I saw from your Twitter, you actually found a copy of Cyforce Classic. Was it essential or was it just a
trade
paperback
of the first
five?
Nine. It's kind of a weird
nine. Okay.
What actually happened was when they were producing, when New Universal started, Warren Ellis's New Universal, which was the reboot of New Universe, they started doing trades, but they only produced 3 trade paperbacks. So only, was it about 25 out of 160 or odd New Universe comics are collected. So they did.
Yeah, and I don't believe they did ones for Mark Hazard Incorporated or no,
Mark
it was
Hazard,
Mark Hazard, Merc, and Kickers Inc. Kickers Inc. did not get one.
No,
I'm
they did volumes
still
for
about.
Star Brand, DP7. I think it was the first 8 issues of DP7 and the first 9 of Cyforce. Those were the only ones that came out with. And then there is a trade of the. For the 20th anniversary, they did a series of Untold Tales of the New Universe, and those are collected in a trade. But that's the only things that are collected.
I'm actually surprised Spitfire and the Troubleshooters didn't.
Well, Spitfire has.
Sort of a
Spitfire is one of the only ones
reprint.
That has like an issue in it that people should pursue. Spitfire and the Troubleshooters has the first Todd McFarlane at Marvel work.
Oh.
Yeah, it was an early issue of Spitfire. There's a lot of really interesting creators on those. Like Mark Texiera did a whole lot of, and did a bunch of issues on Cyforce. Ron Lim did a pile of Cyforce issues. A lot of it is like one-offs, though. Because the New Universe was kind of collapsing from the very day it started.
But they did something in the New Universe that I always kind of like. They tried a reboot.
They tried a couple
before
of things.
Before they
and
gave
they,
it up.
There's some incredibly strong stuff later on in the universe because there was 8 books to start. After a year, they canceled 4 of the books. One of the big problems with it was that most of the books didn't have stable creative teams for the first year. The exception of 1 or 2 books, they all had a bit of a revolving door of creators. And after the first year.
And I actually felt having Keith Giffen on Justice. Although creatively a brave decision, hurt not only that book, but the entire New Universe because
it was
so
and
weird,
I,
his art
I
style.
Was I really didn't like his stuff the first time I saw it. It wasn't until
I remember specifically dropping all my New Universe books right at that point, and then I added them back in because I missed. I miss DP7
that was a really cool
a whole
book.
Lot.
It's the only one that had a stable creative team for the entire run. Mark Gruenwald and Paul Ryan.
What wasn't Byrne on Starbrand for quite a long time?
Yeah,
he
after
had a
the
good
first
run on
year,
there too, didn't he?
They canceled 4 of the books, and the other 4 got more or less stable teams from then to the end. Because they ran DP7, Cyforce, and Justice all ran 32 issues. So in the New Universe was around for about 3 years, which is like a lot longer than a failed universe would be these days.
Oh yeah, and even after all the books were canceled,
The
didn't we get the
war.
draft
The war
and
was the yeah. The war was the
they
last
just
thing. So
the
the four
war,
books
okay.
ended, and then the war that wrapped everything up. The war took forever to come out, hindered by having Ayatollah Khomeini be the bad guy in the story, and then the real Ayatollah died while the series was still being published, making it a bit extra odd. Yeah, John Byrne did from it wasn't that many issues, but it was like he wrote it for. Wrote and did Leia and I think it breakdowns or something for about 2 years, but it only ended up being 10 issues or something like that. Maybe not even.
Not to mention, I mean, he gets double credit because he actually writes himself
He
an appearance
writes
in
himself an
it.
appearance and then kills himself in the book. He and Grunwald and I think it's Tom DeFalco are appear and then are killed. It's awesome. Actually murders himself in the book. He wrote from, I think it was 11 to 19 is what I want to say. I think it's only nine issues.
It does put into perspective when we complain about a series going or a crossover or an event like Earth 2. I'm sort of going, okay, World's End didn't work. Earth 2 is sort of meandering a little bit right now. The whole World's Finest thing didn't work out for Earth 2. I keep wanting to say, let's just kill it off now. But it just keeps going. I know it should have been the World's End's been
No,
shortened,
World's End is going to run as long as it was going to run.
but still,
World's End
just
hasn't been shortened. It was always planned to end April 1st.
oh, I thought it was shortened
No,
from its original run.
everything was always planned to end on April. All three weeklies end the same day. That was always the plan.
And then Convergence starts, which I'm actually kind of excited about.
As having read
Sorry?
Future's End, like now that hey, like reading Future's End every week, it's so clear that Future's End is leading into Convergence, and it's actually making me more excited for Convergence. I was kind of unsure of it at first, and then as Future's End sets more of it up, I'm actually more interested in it now.
The only one that the only thing that's sort of dampering my enthusiasm for what I'm calling not Secret Wars is Comicsology has been nice enough to put out
Oh
the
yeah.
original Tangent line, and I've bought a couple of those, and on a whole they were terrible. I actually forgot how terrible they were, and knowing we're returning to this universe in Convergence, I believe, just does
think
not excite me in the
it's only like
least.
a side story in one book or something. You'll be okay.
I know, I'll survive. I survived Rob Liefeld doing New 52 books. I can survive this. I'm just saying, if you're gonna push a series by releasing old material, Tangent should not have been the way to go. They should be out there. But, have a quiet release, maybe after the crossover if the books aren't all that good.
Barely remember Tangent. I think it happened while I was not reading, so I don't know that I've actually encountered any of it. It was like vague memory.
Yeah, no, they weren't. Yeah, it was. They were just recreations of classic characters, which is a good idea. But the talent
It was a
behind
fifth
it
week
was
event,
not.
and usually those.
Yeah, it was a fifth week. It was it, I, and I'm sure there's lots of listeners out there that liked it. I'm just not one of them. Reducing otherwise interesting team like the Metal Men to being a military unit that are just guys with guns does not do it for me.
Well, visit our Facebook page or contact our Twitter. We talk podcasts on Twitter. We talk podcasts on Facebook. Tell us how wrong we are about Tangent Universe. Tell me the best
Yes, I'm sure it has fans, I'm just
recommend the
not
best
one.
Tangent Universe book for me to read. I have the vaguest memory. Maybe it was a Dan Jurgens one I read or something. just like the super vague.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he was on there. I
Well,
believe he was Green Lantern, but I can't be sure,
the
so.
Tangent Omnibus, maybe I can
Ah.
I'll look for the library.
Yeah, well, no. They're cheap on Comicology. I think there's only 12 of them. Wait a month till Convergence starts, and I'm sure we're going to have some sort of
Well,
Convergence sale. You'll be able to pick them up for 99 cents each.
the yeah, I've been thinking of Convergence as just like a 2 month long fifth week event.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's sort of exciting because it's sort of a holiday from continuity, yet celebrating continuity all at
It's
the same time.
there's some.
We're going to get a lot of stories that are just out of nowhere, leftover crap that needs to be told,
Yeah.
but there was no place to put it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to, well, I'm looking forward to, like, I mean, 1 week in specific, which is the 90s week. And that was my golden age of DC, so.
Is it the 90s
It
without an
is, yeah.
issue by Rob
There's no Rob
Liefeld?
Liefeld work in this book. Well, he never did
No.
any DC work in the 90s anyway.
Yeah, you're right, but still. His work was the 90s for me. Sorry, I at that time I was Marvel over DC, so I was Image over Marvel. Yeah. Rob Liefeld was, it was all my fault.
I
I'll
really
admit
dug
that
Rob
now.
Liefeld when he started.
I'm
I mean,
sorry.
what is forgotten about Rob Liefeld is that, I mean, it's not that his art is good. I'm not gonna say it's good, but it was so different. Like, when Liefeld and McFarlane and Lee and Pertasio came on the scene, their stuff was so different from, I mean, we had grown up with like 15 years of everyone looked like Byrne and Perez. Like, I mean, when you think that almost everything you looked at looked like Byrne or Perez, and like we said, I mean, what, neither one of us liked Keith Giffen the first time we saw it. That was too far out of the box. And then to see, like, Liefeld and McFarlane and these crazy things that don't make sense. Like, they're not photorealistic. They're not like 70s style superheroes. They were crazy.
I'm sort of curious. When did you start to like Giffen?
Legion of Superheroes.
Did it take all the way
Legion of
to the
Superheroes.
Justice
I mean,
Legion of Supers? Okay. I have to say I waited for Ambush Bug. I needed a comedy series, and it did take me several issues to get into it, but once I could figure out what he was laying
And
down, it was
I
awesome.
probably read a couple of Ambush Bug, but it was before I really, really liked him. It was the Legion 5 years later, which would be 89, I think. I think that's 1989. That was when I, like, really got.
Did he draw that
Yeah,
as well?
he plotted and drew for the first couple of years. He didn't do a whole run, because by the time it got rolling, he was plotting two Justice League books, and because he had co-writers on Legion, the Beer Bombs were co-writing.
You really wonder how his career ever like happened. 'Cause I mean it was a shock to the system. It really
And there's some cool
was.
story.
I don't think we'll ever
Well,
get another like him.
he was not an artist. He had no thoughts of being an artist. And he was turning in, the story goes that he turned in plots with essentially page breakdowns, and an editor said, "Why don't you just draw the damn thing?" Like, and he's like, "But I'm no good." He's like, "Draw it anyway." And that's how he started, was that he never thought he was never thought of himself as an artist, and he had this really weird style that was the kind of style that you have if you're unpolished. Like, it's very blocky, lots of flat colors. Lots of blacks. Fills whenever he didn't know how to draw something.
Oh,
So.
the 90s where stuff like that happened. I believe that was the story between behind almost every issue of Marvel Comics Presents as well. They just Oh God, we had some awful art.
Well, it was.
That's funny. I'm not, I love Giffen, but I've never actually known that he was an artist first. I always assumed because his style is so different. I mean, there are not many artists that will just draw a belt buckle in a heavy dialogue scene. Yet he would. Extreme close up on eye. Extreme. It was weird. It was really weird.
I just bought the
Oh well. We
I
should
just
pick
bought
up.
the Ambush Bug showcase. I'm looking forward to digging through that. I'm unsure how some it's going to go on.
Oh yeah, no,
I'm
that's
unsure how
there's
some of it's going to
questions.
go in black and white, but we'll see.
I actually think with just
Some of it
inks it would
will.
be
Some of it
clearer.
will. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it was a good deal, so.
Does it did it include Son of Ambush
It
Bug, the
includes
new one,
everything
or?
except the mini the last mini series. The mini series.
Oh, okay. Which is the only thing on
Yeah, what
Comixology,
was the
so.
mini series called?
I want to say Sun, but I think it might be
Year
Year
Nothing, I think is what
One,
it's called.
or.
Year None, maybe?
Yeah.
It's whatever that miniseries is. That's the only thing that's not in it. Because it collects Ambush Bug, Son of Ambush Bug, Stocking Stuffer, and all of the DC Comics Presents and action stories he was in. So yeah, it's a good collection.
That's another one weird. They never they should have made a regular series out of that at some point. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's about time we get to some. Oh, no, we haven't. I haven't asked you yet. How much bigger since your trip to Vancouver have you suffered any sort of a booster gold avalanche with all the product you obviously had to have
I
shipped
did
home?
find a Booster Gold item in a great comic store in Vancouver. If you're in the Vancouver area, RX Comics, it's a great old school comic store. Lots of long boxes and piles of dusty action figures and discounted trade paperbacks. It was beautiful. It's a beautiful place. And I found buried on a back shelf a Justice League International Booster Gold figure with the popped collar and two thumbs up in for the mold. The figure actually has two thumbs up.
Has Pop Vinyl done a
No,
Pop figure
tragically
of
no.
Booster Gold yet?
It's,
'Cause I want him to have the pop collar with that big head, and I
there's
have
a
no idea how
I
they
found
do
a
it.
picture of someone who did custom ones that were repaint custom repaints and it had the collar. They did a Booster and a Beetle repaint. I haven't tackled that one yet. I did a repaint of a Lego figure so that I would have a Booster Lego figure. But I've not tackled the Pop figure.
Haven't they made one yet? I thought there was one in one of the sets. Especially with this new video game. I think in Lego Batman 3,
He is, yeah,
Booster
he
is a
is playable.
playable character.
Which is, it's tempted me to buy a whole system just so I can play Booster Gold, or at least upgrade my computer. I think it's available on PC, so.
Oh. Yeah, that would prove you're actually a
That's
fan,
right. I'm
not
a
just a
vacant
poser,
comic
wouldn't
book.
it?
All right, let's talk about some darn comics. I guess I could pretty much start anywhere. We've got a stack of stuff here.
Yeah, stacks and stacks
And
and stacks.
I can try to figure out how to open these in the right way. All right, well, let's start with we got a whole bunch of stuff from Planet Jimbot. So we'll come back to what you'll see that you'll hear that name a few times through the episode. I'm looking at Amazing and Fantastic Tales. This is a series of it's an anthology book credited to many folks on the cover. Jim Alexander is the main guy from Planet Jimbot. I assume he's the Jim in Jimbot. Jim Campbell, Luke Cooper, Glenn Fleming, Eva Holder, Graham McLeod, Ed Murphy, and Eleanor Winter. Amazing and Fantastic Tales, Issue 4. This is November 2014. Parental advisory, mature content. And this was one of the wacky books that we got. it has some interesting stories. An interesting variety of tales.
Unfortunately, variety of tales. Unfortunately, the first one, the art was so atrocious. I really did not enjoy the art, and I sort of tuned out by the second story. I have to admit, I did not even complete this comic book, and that's saying something. Because I read some crap. Maybe a decent inker would have helped, but on a whole, there was just way too many pencil lines for me to even consider this a real effort.
I don't
do you disagree with me?
There are three text pieces in this, which I'm not a fan of. I got to be honest. No, I do not dig text pieces in comics. I don't know why. Maybe it's because my brain just doesn't want to do both of those things. there's not even any interstitial art. There was one story in it that I did like, Bad Tooth, which is Eva Holder art, which is a bit manga-esque. It's got speed lines and such in it. It's a heavier ink, like manga can be. And it's basically a violent, you know, beaten up to bullies kind of story, which I dug. It's quite violent. Lots of little kids, like, hitting other little kids with baseball bats. So I mean, that was kind of the high point of the issue for me. But yeah, lots of text. And something that can be frustrating with independent comics, small press comics, is continued stories. I am always of two minds about the continued stories, because I mean, in cases in this book, I'm getting like 4 pages of a story and then it says to be continued. You're a small press book. You may not publish for another year and you've given me 4 pages. Like, you gotta give me something to hang on for. So say not the cream of the crop on that one. I started kind of random.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Especially with starting with issue 4. That was probably our fault for not researching it more thoroughly. But I don't know. For me, of the ones we're doing tonight, I think this may have been the worst one.
All right.
One.
Let's palate cleanse.
Yeah. Oh, we should have planned this out better.
I love that you said we should have planned it out better instead of planned it out at all. Well, let me jump to, I'm going to jump to Last Breath. And let me find the company name. I don't know. Actually, is there a company name on it? There might not be. This is.
There is.
It's not on the cover, whatever it is. This is a good pod right here as I flip through a PDF over and over. Angry Eggman LLC.
There is a publisher because
All
it
right.
is on
well, this is
this
is written by Sam Eggleston, penciled by Jason Baruti, inks by Josh Oakes, color letter by John Hunt. This is a one-shot, was funded through Kickstarter, and it is the story of Americans returning to the moon in the year 2022. And this is the polar opposite of what I was just saying. This is This is a complete story in and of itself. It is, again, the title's Last Breath. Very much a pro space exploration story, a working together story. Tensions between the United States and China have escalated. China has been to the moon over and over. The Americans have rushed a plan to get Americans back on the moon, and things go terribly for the Americans.
Let's not spoil it anymore there, because this is the one you need to spend your money on. It is available through Comixology. It's $1.99. The name is Last Breath. And if you want to read a comic book that from people that are passionate about a subject, reading this book, and I have an interest in NASA, a space exploration. I could tell these people really, really liked or were passionate about this topic, and I really responded to this. It's cheap, $1.99. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Unfortunately, the company has only ever produced this one book, but this is a good read as far as I'm concerned. Art is gorgeous, positive messages. I can't say enough about this book. If you trust me at all, $1.99 is nothing.
It's a well crafted book. It's got good art and good writing. Excellent book. It was definitely my favorite out of the whole line. So it's all downhill from now. So I mean, we really had a choice. Do we start high? We decided to start low and then go so high that everything else is going to be in the middle. All right, well, let's pick one of the weirder books out of the stack. This was actually a trade paperback, 400 pages, Death Rap Graphics. The book is called Weapon Brown, and I'm just looking for the creative team here. Jason Youngbluth, written and drawn. Inking a letter and contributions by Emil Novak, Jerry Coffey, and Jeff Huckleberry. This is 400 pages, and it is Charlie Brown by way of 2080. That's the best way I could think to describe this. It is full on Charlie Brown, Charles Brown, Weapon Brown, I thought the first chapters were really strong, and then they kind of had played out the gag. It's probably too much of a good thing. They kind of had played out, you know, the dog name that he calls Snoop, the girlfriend, the prostitute named Patty, who tastes like peppermint. they do every bit from Peanuts in the first two or three chapters. And then after that, you don't really know why the story is continuing. But if you can find just the first couple, I would recommend.
Yeah. I'd actually say skip this one because it is a graphic novel, a really great idea for a one shot. But at 400 pages, they could have just edited all the jokes into one thing, and it would have been a satisfying issue. But yeah, by issue two, I was going, okay, I get it, Charlie Brown.
They start rolling in some things from other comic books, from other comic strips. Some of your favorite talking animals are feral animals of the apocalypse. It is a post-apocalyptic, probably should mention that. Charlie Brown as a cyborg in a post-apocalyptic world. So, I mean, that's a That sounds like a good pitch for a book. So, you know, if that grabs you, track this one down. At least the, like I said, the first 50 pages, which is probably originally published as one comic or two comics. I didn't do any research to find out how this was packaged originally. That's Weapon Brown.
No, actually, for me, if you've read Transmetro and you saw the Charlie Brown character, just basically walk through a couple panels, you got the joke, and there's no need to go any further. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're just gonna keep rolling. Do we have anything else to say on Weapon Brown? All right.
No.
Well,
poor
good.
Title. Because you get some really weird stuff when you type it into Comicology. And I would not, even if we've really sold this book to you for some reason, typing in Weapon Brown into a Google
search
engine.
Turn that
safe search
on before you hit that.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump over to Parallel Man. Publisher is Future Dude. This is issue number 1 of 7 of Invasion America. Full quote from Bob Layton on the front. That's a good one there. It's a couple of stories here, or a couple of credits, sets of credits here. So, story by Jeffrey Morris and Frederick Hogan, and written by Jeffrey Morris and Frederick Hogan. I don't know why they get separate credits for the same thing. Story consultants, Christopher Jones, Ira Livingston IV. Pencils by Christopher Jones, colorist Zach Atkinson. And this is, this would be your movie pitch, in comic form. There are alternate worlds, and President Obama is kidnapped on Air Force One, and hilarity ensues. That's my summary of the story. there's dinosaurs. You know, there's giant dinosaurs, so that's okay. And mushrooms.
And
there's
mushrooms.
A lot happening in this book, that's for sure. I don't know, it caught my attention. Like, the art was not my favorite. The art's a bit simplistic. There's not much for backgrounds in most of the book, but there was some high concept stuff, you know, playing with the alternate worlds and you know, they didn't steal a generic president. It is actually President Obama that they grab, and he turns up in a destroyed Washington D.C. So it's crazy. I would be interested to read more of this book. Or wait for the film.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying about it does feel a little bit like a movie pitch. But the sheer amount of ideas presented in the first issue leads me to believe that later on we might actually get a coherent story if we let this play out a little bit more. I believe we have another book by this publisher, which I actually really liked. So I'd give it a second issue because there is some cool stuff happening in this comic book. We got parallel worlds. We got a destroyed Washington on another planet. I think we have some sort of invasion happening between parallel worlds. There is a lot going on. I think it was a 38 issue page issue we read. There was not enough time. The exact opposite of Weapon Brown. I needed more to even make a judgment to say if this is really cool or overthought. I definitely look into this one. If you're already buying some other comics from this company, I would definitely add it into a stack.
All right. Recommend on that one. All right.
Yep.
Moving right along to and just grabbing these quite random.
Well, why don't we do that? The other one, Adam 12 from the
Why
same
don't we?
company.
Is that the same company? Maybe. Not Adam 12. So what the heck one is it?
No, not. Oh, sorry.
What one? Oh, no, it was
I thought it was
Brainstorm.
Adam 12.
Brainstorm from Future
Brainstorm.
Dude. This one is issue one of six.
Okay.
Again, we've got Jeffrey Morris, Kieran Morris, and Ian Morris on story. Jeffrey Morris and Ira Livingston the fourth on writing. Dennis Carello on pencils and inks, and Dennis Carello on color. This one I have to refresh my memory. Oh, okay, I know what this one. This was the Storm Chasers one. Another
The
cool
Storm Chaser.
another cool sci-fi kind of book, which I like.
Yeah, no, you the first couple of pages, I started rolling my eyes and sort of went, ooh, somebody watched Twister one too many times. And then we start getting some futuristic tank-like devices penetrating the storm cloud, and then we get some really odd uses of this technology later in the book. Really interesting. I actually felt it created a complete world. I definitely spend money on this
Yeah,
book.
I really liked where the book went. Yeah, as you said, it was hard to tell from the first few pages what kind of book it was going to be. And then, as it develops, I mean, the technology they're using is something that can control the weather. And then there's a lot of directions to go, and they go in a few of them, once you have that idea. So yeah, I'll be trying to track down some more of these, see where they're at with, Future Dude looks like a company that we'll want to pay some attention to.
Actually, I think they have really strong colors in both their books. With a lot of indies, I actually find the coloring is usually the thing that sorts it out. That oh, okay, this is an indie book. They didn't know what they're doing. The color in this book is spectacular. I really enjoyed
Yeah,
it in
very
both
professional
books.
packaging on both. The color is it's definitely digital color, and they've gone somewhere, like they've played with some background some effects and some layered effects, smoke effects, and there's a panel I'm looking at that has a video effect where there's swipes across the screen from the rastering of the video. Yeah, so they play with some. There's a bit more here than just four color, that's for sure.
And you know what? I've sold myself. I am currently buying all six
Oh,
issues on
they're
Comixology
all in
as we
Comixology, you say.
speak. Yes, they all are. So if you're interested in Parallel Man or Brainstorm,
How many
they
of
are there.
Parallel Man are there?
And oh, I
Yeah,
have to actually look that up now. Sorry, I was admiring the covers of Brainstorm are spectacular. Wow, that is some cool art.
well, clearly the creators will see a big spike in their sales just because Chris and I will buy them today.
Yes.
All right, moving right along to one of the definitely the one of the odder books we had in our pile, from Greyhaven Comics. This one's from 2013, so a little bit further back in the archives. And Travis Holyfield is the writer, and Edward Whatley is the artist, and this is Doberman the Canine Crusader. Which is a very, very much a Batman 66 send-up. Extremely much. I believe the secret identities are, is it Ward West and Bird Adams, I think are the names, something like it.
Oh, come on. You go with those names? Come on. The Beagle is the Robin character being the Beagle. Doberman and the Beagle. That is genius. I've actually been buying this book on Comicology since its inception, and I've been enjoying it greatly. It is a cute little thing. Definitely, I always try to read. It doesn't come out monthly because it's independent, but I always try to read it right next to my
That's
Batman 66.
a good pairing right
It's a
there.
fun book.
I thought that he.
Well, it provides exactly what Batman 66 doesn't. Batman 66 is silly but doesn't recognize it. Doberman, it knows it's silly, and it still works. Plus, I mean, in the first issue, the one where I'm actually supposed to be reviewing, they do point out a huge thing. There has to be a company that produces these death traps. I want that company to exist somehow.
I madly love the King Tut send up. They have Egypt Sean. Egypt Sean. I love that name. I love that character and that name more than I love King
Oh God, I
Tut.
didn't get that.
Egypt Sean. I like that character more than King Tut, I gotta be honest. Yes, the Anglophile, Flower Power, and
And
Cougar. Cougar is the Catwoman analog, the Carnival King. It's a super fun book. It is a totally fun book. I don't know how many issues are out.
believe it's only 99 cents. It's been a while since
Well,
I
then
think the series might
I
be
would buy one for yourself and for a friend
completed.
at that price. That's some good stuff there. It's a super. I'm not usually a fan of quote unquote fun books. I'm not usually a fan of silly, and this totally gets me. I love it. It was just super fun.
And if anyone's interested, Parallel Man does have 6 issues on
But it's a
Comicsology.
seven issue. Darn thing's not over. All right, get on the ground floor. You can find out about Parallel Man before everyone else jumps on with the
Because
seventh
that's
issue.
how things work.
All right, what else are we gonna cover here?
I lied. Doberman is not 99 cents. It's $3.99. It's full
Well,
cost.
shucks. It'll.
But the first issue is only
Well,
$1.99.
you
Buy it.
gotta
It's worth $1.99. Give it to a friend. It's worth. If you have any love of the Batman 66 television series, definitely worth a read. Should
Yeah,
we
let's jump
do another
to
book?
we got two issues here of a book
Pop.
from Escape Comics called Under the Flesh. This is by G. Deltre, I'm going to say. Illustrated and lettered by J.L. Gills or Giles. Take your pick on that one. Neither one likes their first name being published, I guess. Undertheflesh.com. They actually have the. I noticed the URL on this one. Another fairly new one. This is October of 2014, so this one's not too far back in the past. There is a plague that only affects men and makes them all crazy. So they're not the undead. They are, but they are sort of zombified, and super violent and wrecking stuff. And women are unaffected, and this one dude who has been experimented on in questionable ways by the military is also unaffected. This is a crazy book. There's like it's super duper violent, like crazy crazy violent. It's the lead character doesn't know anything about himself, which is an extra level of confusion in the storyline. I would say, on the positive side, I think it's an interesting story. I think the art is really nice, and I think it's, like, you know, it's really out there storytelling. The negative, it spends about half of the first issue on narrative boxes to set up the whole storyline instead of the characters figuring out as they go. And there's a couple of times that I got confused about which character was which, because it jumps back and forth with a couple of characters. And when almost the entire cast is women, who are all, like, who don't always have enough differentiation in their look, it got a bit confusing for me at times. But overall, I enjoyed it.
You're extremely kind. As the podcast resident zombie hater, these may not be zombies, but they're close enough. Did not appreciate the zombie-like things going on. The one cool thing I thought was we had one character tape a baseball bat
machete.
To his hand.
It's a machete, yeah. I thought it,
was it
I think it's a baseball
it was
bat
baseball
in one
bat.
Panel and a machete
okay.
in another. So, I'll, so yeah, there's that.
I thought that was kind of a cool idea. Also, a little bit misguided since it was the one male character, and I thought, okay, you got one male not going crazy. Let's give him the weapon he can't drop if he becomes a zombie. I thought that was a little bit questionable on. Yeah, no. No, the only thing that could possibly save this book is if all the women all of a sudden became scantily clad zombie killers. But
well,
that
know,
would be
a
different
there's
book.
There's a couple that were going down that road.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Even then, I'm not.
All right, talking about crazy books, Rough Cut Comics. This is, again, Jim Alexander with a different label. Jim wrote wrote all of the stories, and then they're shorter stories. This book is called Good Cop, Bad Cop. We have art by, Gary McLaughlin, Will Pickering, Luke Cooper, covers by McLaughlin and Cooper. And this is, I don't know, I don't think I can talk about the book at all without giving away the central premise.
I think you have to, they give it up in the title. I think you can, I think it's safe to
it's,
say
it's Jekyll,
Jekyll
and
Hyde
as a police officer, is what this book is essentially. And so he is, As the title tells you, he is both good cop and bad cop at the same time. I like the concept, the art. Of the three artists, there was only one that I really was okay with the art. It's a black and white book. If you're going to do a black and white book, you can put the time into the backgrounds because your colors are not going to cover you. I do wonder if this was intended as a color book that was rolled back to black and white, because it doesn't look like it's got the detail that most black and whites do, particularly when this could go to a noir direction, and the art style just hasn't been created that way. It's wacky. I mean, if I found it in a cheapo bin or something, I would get it. I wouldn't return for more, but as a single issue, it's crazy.
Wow. Actually, you know what? You hit the nail on the head there with it felt unfinished. I actually got kind of excited about this book because I love noir. Jekyll and Hyde is sort of a thing for me. And it has an introduction by John Wagner, which I thought was – I love John Wagner's writing. His 2000 AD, spectacular. I've read so much Batman that he's done that's awesome. And after reading the introduction, I know why he talks about the art almost the writer almost exclusively in the introduction. Yeah, the art really didn't help it, but it was a really interesting, it had some interesting things going on. And once again, with a little bit of polish, this could have been a huge thumbs up. As it sits, maybe leave it in that bin. I don't think it enhances anyone's collection.
All right, I'm looking to see what else I read. What's did you get a chance to read You Are Not Alone? All right, so again,
Yes, I did. Oh no. You
all
weren't.
right,
Oh, you're
again,
not.
this is
Yes,
from
I did.
Greyhaven
Yes, okay.
Comics.
Sorry.
This was funded on Kickstarter. This is the 2013 volume. I know that they did a. I don't know if the second volume has come out. There is a second volume that they also funded through Kickstarter. You Are Not Alone is 182 pages, and it is. I believe it is available in Comixology. And it is a story about youth in crisis. It is a short story collection, originally inspired by Sandy Hook. And it's primarily about bullying, but it is about the various sorts of kids who get bullied. So, every once in a while you hear the phrase, this book didn't need to be published. I don't know that any comic needs to be published except maybe You Are Not Alone. There's always ups and downs in storytelling, but the goal of this book is to give kids who are in these situations, people who are in these situations, a bit of an ear and a bit of a voice. It's a really important book. I did actually support the second Kickstarter. So.
Wow, we kind of disagree on this. I admit it is an excellent, good intentions all the way around, but I personally don't need any comic books in the ABC after school special genre. This one, unfortunately, to me, it sort of hits like a hits its ho point home with a sledgehammer. These things need to be tackled in comic books, but it can't be the sole point of a comic book. I respond much more to maybe Spider-Man interacting with a kid with some issues rather than an entire issue based around this. I unfortunately don't think this needs to exist. And
That
maybe I'm Scrooge, but
it would, I mean, I will admit it'd be a better book with if all of the stories were Spider-Man Power I'll give you
yeah.
that one. All right, well, let's move right along. We've probably got enough to do maybe two or three more books. Let's go with Action Lab, number 1 of 4, The First Hero. And looking for my creative team here. Is not on the front page, not on the inside front cover like it usually is. Why don't you start talking about the first hero while I look for the credits?
Well, the first hero is once again takes place in one of the much maligned genres of comic bookdom that I don't particularly appreciate. That's superpowers in the real world. We have Afghani a participant in Desert Storm. Who manifests powers? And I say Desert Storm, but no, he's fighting in Afghanistan. I didn't like this book. I think Action Lab produces a lot of quality. This one I don't know about. I didn't enjoy this one. So, my biggest problem is there is nothing new and novel here.
I would have to agree with you. I enjoyed the book, but I enjoyed it as a bit of a repeat of stuff that's been done elsewhere. And I think a lot of this stuff was handled, quite well by Straczynski's Supreme Power. and also his Rising Stars, that, you know, took that premise of superpowers in the real world. So yeah, I don't know that there's that much new in the story. I think it's well crafted. It is another book that spends, you know, half dozen pages on text boxes to tell you the basic thing instead of just getting into story. It's called the First Hero because every person that that develops powers in this world goes crazy, and so there are lots of super villains, but no one is a hero, and this is the first person to exhibit powers that wants to use them for good. Credits on the cover, because there is no credits page included in the preview PDF here. Rutgazer, Sevi, Stressing, and Mulder are the names in the front cover here.
Yeah, no. The one thing I did find very entertaining about this book, although they don't mean it to, extra human. They use the terms for superheroes because, once again, Marvel and DC sort of own those. I don't think they've actually tried to prosecute anyone.
They do own the copyright. I don't know if, or
one.
The copyright to the word superhero, but I don't know if they enforce it. Yeah.
I'm always on the look. Anytime a new publisher starts up a superhero line, I'm kind of curious how they're going to handle that. And Extra Human did give me a smile, but not for the reason.
Yeah, like the
new
universe had Paranormal.
Image has Super Freaks, which much to my
DC uses
not
Metahuman.
On.
That's what they're using on the TV show as well. They first used that in the.
Well, DC does own superheroes along with Marvel.
Yeah,
so
they use I think
they
use superhero,
use super-
but as far back as the crossover Invasion, the in-story term they used was metahuman, and that's what they use on Flash and Arrow now too, for superpowered individuals. Because they use it for whether they're a good guy or a bad guy. I mean, it is an inclusive term of anyone with powers. I did dig. I will say that it's the first page, so it's not really a spoiler. They do tie the first public display of powers to a famous assassination attempt. I thought that was clever. It was a neat little beginning to the story for those of us who spent time obsessed with assassinations through parts of our lives. For, you know, a couple of decades of our life.
Oh, thank God I don't have to hear about that
We're all
anymore.
Happy to hear about that. I'm a recovering conspiracy theorist. Hi, my name is Keith. I'm a recovering conspiracy theorist. And I was in a bookstore with Brett, our pal Brett from the podcast here. When we were in Vancouver a few years ago, and I heard the guy, as we're looking through, there's a guy behind the counter pontificating to someone else in the store about JFK assassination stuff. And I looked at Brett and I said, "Did I sound that crazy?" And Brett said, "Yes, you did." I'm like, "All right, well, I'm glad that time has passed." All right, let's talk comics.
I will say we got an extra year. I think we could gotten you out of that a year earlier if Oliver Stone
I would have been
hadn't
out of
made
it
the movie.
Like a decade and a half earlier if Oliver Stone hadn't made that movie. I was only sort of interested in it until that movie came out. I had watched one TV special. That would have been the end of that. I wouldn't have read 30 or 40 books on the subject. And then I read the stellar Vincent Bugliosi 1,200-page, 1,500-page book, and that was the end of that. Amazing book, actually. Like so great it has actually been. They excerpted part of the book and published as a second book. So it's so gigantic. Bugliosi's timeline was pulled out and was published as Parkland, because it was the timeline of it, of his book, which is only about a third of the book, is the basis of the film Parkland. Moving on,
Moving on.
Black Mask.
Critical hit.
So this is Critical Hit, Matt Miner. So we got Matt Miner, pencils and inks by Jonathan Brandon Sawyer, colors by Doug Garbark. Covers by Francisco Francavilla and Phil Noto, doing alternate covers on this bad boy. Phil Noto, that's worth the price of admission right there for the Phil Noto cover. This is a wacky book. This is a crazy book. The style's very much like Babs Tarr on Batgirl, or a Becky Cloonan kind of style. Can you describe what's happening in the story?
Other than the convoluted PETA references, no. This is animal protection extremism, sort of taking a superhero-ish vigilante tilt. I liked all the characters, yet I'm not sure they're endorsing responsible action in this world. I had some troubles with this one. It was a well enough crafted book that I actually sort of dug the story, and then sort of sat back and went, wait a minute. Arson is not a good idea, no matter how noble your intentions actually are.
I think that's one of the interesting parts of the book is that you have this automatic reaction, particularly when you're reading comics, where you think that the main character, the person narrating the story, is your protagonist, but maybe there isn't a protagonist. Maybe maybe it's like Punisher, and you're not necessarily supposed to cheer for the main character of the story. We're programmed from superhero comics that the main character of the story is the good guy, and that's the person whose point of view we're supposed to, feel for or subscribe to.
We're supposed to feel for him because the bad guys are so bad.
The bad guys are almost cartoonishly bad.
Cartoonishly bad. Insulting. If I was a hunter, I would be extremely insulted. And I've known hunters that actually are responsible hunters and care a lot for the animals more than I do, yet they still have some sort of rationale that allows them to go out and kill them for whatever reason. I don't completely get it, but still, they do more for the environment and animals than I do, so I can't really fault for them for that. But these hunters, man, all racists, all willing to shoot anybody, and it's hinted at.
Yeah, they can't just be one thing. That is certainly a failing.
No, these guys are bad.
None of these guys are, just successful businessmen. They're all Lex Luthor. Like, they can't just be hunters. They have to be racist too, and misogynistic, and maybe a little rapey. But Phil Noto cover. Did I mention that there's a Phil Noto cover?
Yes.
So I don't know. I would say.
No, I was on the board on this one, except I was a little offended.
And I think maybe that's okay. All right, I think we've probably got time for one more. Is there anything that you want to hit on?
I kind of wanted to talk about Adam 12 a little bit, I think.
Let me just call up I'll get the creators here. G. Boddick Productions. Script by...
G.
Botic. Botic.
Botic.
G. Botic. Brother of Robotic. G. Botic. Script by Gigio, coming with Gigio Longo, artist Nick Sutters, and cover by Christine Larson. Adam12thebook.com. Always put your URL on your credits page. That's handy for us reviewers. I didn't particularly care for this one. It was wacky. It was
Really, I kind of liked it. I do have an addendum to
a
that,
qualified elective.
but no, I mean this is the story of a reincarnation of Adam and as of Adam and Eve, and he sort of has to figure out how to reboot society and whether it needs to reboot and. There's some wacky that stuff that goes on, and it's kind of fun. We read 5 issues. I make that 6 issues. I can't count. And I enjoyed it. I do have a addendum there though, because I have never read a comic book that hates women so much. All the women in this comic book, other than Eve, who doesn't really have much of a role except in the last issue. Turn into demons. Any male character that we have in the book does help our protagonist along, and in some way or form, in some form. I did get this really strange feeling that women are evil while reading this book. But other than that, and I don't think. I think it's just something I'm picking up on. I don't think it was meant to be there. It just is there. I'm seeing it. But Adam 12, kind of a cool book. It actually reminded me a lot of Dave, to tell you the truth, only without the robots thing.
An intriguing, qualified recommendation.
Well. I couldn't let the women hating thing go because
It
I
is,
thought it was so
yeah, it's
obvious.
a problem, for certainly problematic that there aren't, it is lacking in positive female characters. It's a lot of dudes helping each other out and women trying to kill them. So we're gonna go with maybe on that one. All right, well let's wrap this up. We will continue to, if you are publishing small press, please send it in to us. Let us know on our you can send us drop us a note on our Twitter account, which is We Talk Podcasts. You can drop us a note on our Facebook page, which is We Talk Podcasts. You can reach me on Twitter at Cub Reporter K. You can email us at comics@wetalkpodcast.com. Is that even close to right? Hey, awesome. That's
I
the one I
think that
always
was
forget.
right.
You can listen to the show on iTunes, on our show sponsor, Comicosity.com, and on our own website at WeTalkPodcast.com, as well as Stitcher. We're on
And
Stitcher
Stitcher.
now. I haven't even visited Stitcher, so someone else is in charge of
Yes.
Stitcher, that's for sure. I'm still using the iTunes podcast, I gotta be honest.
Yeah. No. Me too. Despite the fact that I don't have a decent, iTunes needs a decent podcast app. Because the one they have
I'm
sucks.
learning to live with it now that I've played with a whole bunch of settings. Now that I've played with it enough that it doesn't automatically download everything on my freaking data plan, that was a nice
Oh,
bill.
that would have pissed me off.
Subscribe to something and then it downloaded 50 back episodes of a podcast on my data plan. I was thrilled. but now that I've made it stop doing that. Is there anything I'm missing? Chris, what's your Twitter?
Chris_WeTalk on
And we'll be
Twitter.
back in about a week's time, depending on when these episodes go up, with one of our pals from the Calgary Comic Creator Summit will be on the show talking about his Kickstarter. So that'll be that's that's We've never done next time on We Talk Comics before. We've never had.
I believe we have. We've never actually completed
Oh,
the
did
next time on, though. We have
I?
hinted at stuff that's happening next
Might
week
have just
and then
jinxed
not
you.
have it happen. Actually, I like to. Brett hinted at a non-We Talk comics thing last
Oh,
week, and we did
fantastic.
get that
It
interview
got, but
up
it went up
promptly.
before the episode where he hinted it.
Oh.
we haven't at the time we're recording this, the last episode hasn't gone up. So that's awesome. He's now he's he
Yes.
previewed something that was up before the episode that he
Yeah.
previewed it in. All right. Well, let us call this an episode because we got some comics to read. And again, thanks to everyone who sent out their small press comics to us to review. Whether we like them or not, we do definitely support independent comics. When you're at a comic show, stop by Artist Alley and grab everything you can because those folks in Artist Alley that are self-publishing, they went out of pocket to print those comics. And for a couple of bucks, you can try something that no one else will know. You will really be on the ground floor if it's the next new thing.
And we've made so many friends that way too. Just awesome people.
The
Awesome
salt
people.
of the earth. That's the small press.
Salt, just because some of the folks we did meet sort of look like hillbillies is not the way to go. We've met some awesome people that don't look like hillbillies too. Salt of the earth. What the hell is that?
Maybe just Cam and Rick. All right, and
Well, that's a term you don't use by very,
yeah, what's
like,
wrong with
salt
salt
of
of
the
the
earth.
earth?
Come on. I just don't, I get the
All
hillbilly
right,
vibe
send
off of
us a
it.
note
That's
on
all.
Twitter if you if give it, tell us your opinion of the phrase "salt of the earth." It'll also give us a bit of a sample group to find out who the heck listens all the way to the end of an episode. The people who listen to the end of an episode, they are the salt of the earth. And we are OUT.